Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
I don't know if you've seen the reports today that vaccination won't be mandatory for students on campus from September, but returning third level students may need to show proof of vaccination to get into the college bars and cafes. To discuss plans for college return, I'm joined by Frank Jones, the General Secretary Designate of the Irish Federation of University Teachers. Tomás Ryan is Assistant Professor at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology in Trinity College, and by Claire Austick, the President of the Union of Students in Ireland. You are all very welcome to the programme. Tomás Ryan, I might start with yourself. It's a simple question in ways. Should we have mandatory vaccination for students returning to third level?
The short answer is I think that we should. I don't think it's an extreme position, though I do appreciate that using the term mandate does get some people irked. If we look at other countries, we know that literally hundreds and hundreds of universities in the USA and Canada are using vaccine mandates on their campuses. Now, they take different forms in different places. Is it to get on the campus in general? Is it to be in sports venues? Is it to be in restaurants and bars? You can have different ways of doing this. My own view is that the simplest thing to do is to do it for access to a university in general. And the reason for that is that then you don't need to be concerned with what kind of cohorts are in what places. And this includes in lecture theatres, of course, because you...
And you are a lecturer. You will be in college lecturing students, and you won't know, I suppose, if they're vaccinated or not. But, I mean, if... It begs the question, really, Tomás, doesn't it? If the optional method, which we've had for all the age cohorts so far, has been working with huge uptake, why differ now for students?
Well, we know that the vaccines work very well for reducing transmission, not perfectly. I mean, you can assume that if you're vaccinated, it reduces your risk of transmitting the virus by about 50 to 60%. And that has a multiplying effect between people who are in a social group together. When you're bringing lots of people together in university, and it's not going to happen all at once, this is going to be a gradual return, I think, to third level education as normal. You're bringing large numbers of people together, and you want to be assured that there's no risk of this creating spreader events that will produce risks to the community, risks to staff, indeed risks to vulnerable students. And, of course, remember, this is Ireland. The students are not staying, most of them, on campus for an entire term. Every weekend, we have this mass exodus to every county in Ireland that then comes back again, which creates issues for spreading around the country. And we're entering into a very uncertain winter period, particularly in this country. The cases are very high, and they're going to get higher. And we're going to be seeing, I think, that vaccines alone as a strategy is not going to be as effective as we think it is until we get cases low. In the meantime, we need to manage environments like universities that are open, and to prevent outbreaks from happening, it's much more secure, obviously, if everybody who can be vaccinated, except those who can't for medical reasons, are vaccinated.
So you make a compelling case, because we're coming into the winter time. You're talking about huge numbers of people together on college campuses, and you're talking then about the movement of masses of people right throughout the country. Let me bring in Frank Jones, and you represent third level lecturers, Frank, for a moment. Say with me, Tomás, if you don't mind. Are you in favour or not of mandatory vaccination of students and staff on return to campus in September, based on what you're hearing from Tomás?
Well, first of all, a lot of what Dr. Ryan says, or most of what Dr. Ryan says, I absolutely agree with. But I'm also of the view that the public health advice, if it's followed, and it doesn't include having mandatory vaccination, that in itself should be an adequate measure. So, and by that I'm referring to specifically the use of masks, the social distancing and the ventilation. Now, we have a problem in the university and the higher education sector. Prior to COVID, we have a crisis of funding, but a crisis of overcrowding too. So, I mean, there might be a difficulty, a challenge with the social distancing, but that's what we're engaging with directly with the universities, or trying more to engage with directly with the universities now, is ensuring that the health advice, the public health advice from NPHET and the CMO, is the advice that prevails. And that,
okay,
that
but you're representing third level lecturers, Frank.
Yes.
And they may be listening to you now, and they may be saying, "Okay, I could be going into a lecture hall in September or October, and 50 or 100 students before me. I don't know if any of them are vaccinated."
That's right, and no different when we go out in public, other than obviously the areas that where it's mandatory to be vaccinated or to have the passport, vaccination passport. That is the situation, that is the advice, and the advice from the HSE website still as it remains today is that the best approach is to socially distance yourself from others than your family.
But in other places you might have to show that you are vaccinated to gain admittance. In college, it's not mandatory, that's the point. And you will be indoors, and you will have large numbers under one roof, and you have admitted that there's maybe a problem with ventilation in some of the rooms, and yet you as a representative are asking third level lecturers to say, okay, to accept that this is okay.
I'm saying that yes, where there is a problem with ventilation, certainly it should be addressed, and that social distancing guidelines should be adhered to, that all the measures, including the use of masks, the antigen testing, which has been introduced in some of the universities, that all these mitigating measures should be used as the tools to mitigate against the spread of COVID. I absolutely share the concerns, but I don't share a view that mandatory vaccination is required.
Okay, is necessary. Say with me, Frank, as well. Claire Osick is president of the USI. What do you think about the mandatory question in relation to vaccines, Claire?
Thank you very much for having me. I think, first of all, it's worth remembering that the framework, I suppose, that was launched back in June in terms of a safe return to on-campus teaching and learning was not created with the expectation that all students and staff would be vaccinated at that point. So there has been, I suppose, an acceleration of the vaccine rollout where students and staff have been able to avail of a vaccine. And many students with underlying medical illnesses won't be able to avail of a vaccine, and they shouldn't be prevented from accessing education. So I suppose with the vaccine rollout, it's been very positive, it's been very successful, many students being able to have a choice in the type of vaccine that they want. So in order to allow, I suppose, a safe return to campus, I think many students are very excited and they're very happy about going back on campus. Mm-hmm. And the framework that was initially created was not made with the intention that students would be fully vaccinated.
Can I put your point to Tomás Ryan? Preventing students who are unvaccinated then, preventing them from accessing education, that's hardly fair.
Exactly. I mean, I think it cuts in both directions. On the one hand, you have older lecturers and older professors who are going to be vulnerable and who probably don't want to be exposed to hundreds of students in a lecture theatre unless they know they're all vaccinated. The converse, of course, are the vulnerable students and, of course, breakthrough infections in students that are going to be able to cause long COVID in them, potentially. So we need to reduce the risk to the student population. Indeed, the risk from their own lecturers who are speaking in the environment, and many of whom have young children who will be going to primary schools and secondary schools this term, which is a vaccine-free environment, and so, you know, carry the risk of bringing the virus from primary and secondary schools and into the third level environment. So I think that one of the things we can really do to mitigate against this is complete vaccination for the undergraduate population.
But I think Claire says she doesn't want that for the student body. Am I right, Claire? You don't want the mandatory element?
Well, I mean, the framework that was launched in June sets out, I suppose, the requirements and the guidelines for HEIs, higher education institutions, to follow. And it was, I suppose, launched and it was created with the mindset that not every single student would be vaccinated at that point. So I'm not sure why, I suppose, anyone would derive from that.
Okay. So, and you're against, spell it out for me, you're against mandatory vaccination of students, are you?
Well, in order to allow, I suppose, access to education and allow for our students to be able to be on campus and unveil and engage in an on-campus teaching and learning environment, I suppose we support the guidelines and the framework that was launched in June.
So it's a difficult circle to square, isn't it, Tomás? I mean, you're a lecturer. You will be returning to campus to teach students face-to-face in September, I assume. Or will you? What have you decided to do?
In the short term, Cormac, I've opted for online teaching. Now, I hate online teaching. I don't like doing it. I much prefer to be in there forming a visual in-person rapport with the students. I love my job. I love doing it. For at least the first half of this term, even for smaller groups, I'll be teaching online because we have limited numbers of big lecture theaters, which we will now be using for smaller groups. Obviously, big lectures won't be happening this term. I think that there's many ways.
But before you move on from that, but what do you say, and it's been raised already, what do you say to parents and students who say, I haven't paid my fees for online teaching. I want the real experience. I want to see the whites of your eyes, and I want to put up my hand and ask you a question if I need to. It's not the same experience. Why should I pay full whack for a diminished experience?
Well, I think we'll get closer back to the real experience with more vaccination we obviously have in the student community. The reality is that universities want to be doing it in person, but the mitigation measures we've put in place, the Herculean efforts of many of my colleagues to put universities in this country online, have obviously taken up a large degree of resources, including human resources. But it's happened. We have delivered. There is still the course content there. There is still proper assessment
there.
But
it's not the same, though, is it? I mean, Claire, do you have a view on this? It's not the same experience if you're sitting online in your own bedroom as it would be in the lecture hall.
I think this year has certainly brought a lot of advantages and I suppose a lot of great points in terms of being able to record lectures, and those students who are vulnerable or those with disabilities have enjoyed at times working and learning from home, but it does not match anything in kind of in-person teaching and learning. So the college experience is everything with the teaching and learning environment. It has everything to do with clubs, societies, volunteering opportunities, and that just cannot be matched when it's online.
And paying full fees for online teaching?
Well, our position would always be that regardless if it's online or in person, we don't think students should be paying the student contribution charge because we do want to ensure that every student has access to education. So regardless if it's online or in person, we would want to see a reduction in the student contribution charge and ensure that everyone has access.
Can I ask you about the other little sting in the tail? Colleges seem to be saying that if you want to access the college bar or the college canteen or maybe other college services, that you might have to show proof of vaccination. Now, in a way, that's mandatory vaccination by the back door maybe for students, Claire, is it?
So I suppose, first of all, it's worth noting that it is in line with the overall public health advice. However, there is a difference between students not being able to access their lunch on campus versus students wanting to have a wind-down social space after lectures. So we would really, really encourage institutions, campuses, senior management to get in touch with their students' unions to be able to iron it out and start those conversations immediately.
What does that mean? Even if you're unvaccinated, to be allowed to go to the college bar, is it?
Well, particularly with restaurants and cafes and being able to have food on campus.
What do you think of that, Frank? Because I've heard Dr. Colm Henry and other public health officials talk about super spreader events before, and the elements they've outlined are large groups in confined spaces, possibly with poor ventilation, sometimes with alcohol involved, and maybe with loud music where people have to shout over each other or the music. That sounds sometimes to me like a college experience.
It does, or it sounds like what we would expect from a college experience, but regrettably, the college experience hasn't delivered to our expectations over the past 18 months, and nor will it for the foreseeable or the short-term future, at least, because the experience is not going to be the same into the future as we expected, and we'll have to follow the public health advice. We will have to do what's safe. And the public health advice when it comes to bars, yes, is the vaccination passport or the showing documentation that you've been vaccinated. I absolutely concur with Claire's concerns there about use of canteens and restaurants on campus. But these are the matters that have to be ironed out locally. But when it comes to the bars, the rules are the rules. They apply off campus and on campus. I don't believe that there should be a separate set of regulations about vaccinations for those attending the campuses.
Can I ask Thomas Ryan about another element of college life that we all remember if you're lucky enough to have gone to a third level institution? And that is that, especially in first year, Thomas, that you might, a gang of let's say from UCD, to pick an example, might go and visit some friends who are starting in DCU and go to the college bar or go to the dorm and have a few drinks and share stories about their experiences over the last number of weeks since they started college. That's likely to be a feature, despite the public health advice, and that would run the risk of transmission as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, of course, but those students can still and will still socialize outside of their main university campuses. In terms of vaccination mandates, it's likely that there will be some kind of sectorial agreement, because that's how things are usually done in this country. At the same time, specific implementation of that may be local. Personally, I think that when you start carving it up based on restaurants, canteens, students who live in accommodation on campus versus those that don't, you are doing it by the back door, and it's a very sort of non-ideal way of doing it. I'd rather see it done consistently across the sector.
Well, what about antigen testing then? Could that help?
Well, one way of doing it by the back door, if you want people to get vaccination, but you don't want them want it to be formally mandatory, of course, is you could say that you need a kind of a certificate, as we use for travel. And if you don't have a vaccine, then you need to be tested on a daily basis, and it's going to be a fee for it. And so you're not going to want to do that. And of course, you're going to get vaccinated. I don't particularly like that way of doing business. That's one way of doing it. I don't suspect, however, that at-home rapid antigen testing is going to be sufficient for that. And I don't want to dismiss the value of antigen testing. I think it has a role to play in the country, and I hope we use antigen testing more. But what I'm saying is that testing is something that needs to be done in a serious way if you're using it instead of vaccination, as some places do for travel. And it's not as good as vaccination. If I'm vaccinated, it's reducing my risk of transmitting the virus by a factor of six or seven, by a much larger factor than if I'm tested, because I can be tested and still be carrying the virus and spreading it.
Okay, look, we'll leave it there. Professor Thomas Ryan, Frank Jones, and President of the USI, Claire Austick, thank you all very much indeed.